Honorable members, I welcome back after the long combination of constituency weeks and the break, and I hope members are fresh coming from there, were able to have some rest. And today our meeting is about the department led by the minister taking us through on the progress that have been made so far. That's the briefing that is going to be led by the minister in addressing governance challenges that are faced by state-owned companies, the progress thus far. Minister will indicate if you are settled now. Thank you very much. I know you are here very early. Shall we start, members? I think so. Over to you, Minister. You might want to introduce your delegation, but I think these are familiar faces. When you allow them to speak, I think they can just introduce themselves when the time comes, if you so wish. It's up to you. Thank you very much, Honorable Gordon, the Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson, and it's good to be with the committee again. And thank you for this opportunity to provide you with an overview of what the department and the various entities that are accountable to this department have been doing over the past 5 months or so in relation to governance challenges in the broader sense of the word. In respect of our delegation, you have a list of officials in front of you, Chair, but on my right, let them announce themselves so that their voices get exercised a bit, and then we'll come back to this.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Makgola Makululu. I'm the acting DG for DPE.
Morning, Chair, and to the members. I'm Khatatso Tlhakudi. I'm the Deputy DG responsible for manufacturing enterprises.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Melashtin Makwabe. I'm the acting DG for legal and governance.
Okay, those would be the main officials here, with one or two others supporting ourselves. So you have the slides in front of you. I imagine most of our colleagues, both in the media and in the committee. Slide 2 is a very quick overview of each of the entities that account to DPE. I'm not going to go through all of them. Safe to say that we indicate in each case what's the state's shareholding, which is largely 100% in all of them, except that you have a few entities in Denel where the state has entered into partnership with private sector entities, and the state might be holding a minority share in some instances and a majority share in others. The numbers also indicate the revenue that is generated in each of these entities, the net profit and loss as per the last financial year, the total assets under the management of that particular entity, and the number of employees in these entities. In the square or rectangle in the lower right-hand side, you get an aggregate number. So the total revenue of these entities is 284 billion rands, which is quite substantial. It's a quarter of a trillion rands. Assets of over a trillion rands, employing over 124,000 people, plus minus. But if we aggregate all the profits and the losses, then you have a net loss of 1.6 billion rands, which is precisely what we need to change as we go on. Slide 3 just reminds us of where we're coming from over the last year or so. Once the Gupta leaks came into the public domain, and this committee began to undertake its review of what an inquiry into what was happening in just one of these entities called Eskom, and these were some of the newspaper and media headlines that we actually saw. The next slide reminds us on the right-hand side of what the President, President Ramaphosa, said during the State of the Nation address earlier this year, that we will intervene decisively to stabilize and revitalize state-owned enterprises, that government will take further measures to ensure that all of the state-owned companies fulfill their economic and developmental mandates, that these SOEs cannot borrow their way out of their financial difficulties, and we will therefore undertake a process of consultation with all stakeholders to review the funding model of SOEs and other measures. We will remove board members from any role in procurement and work with the Auditor General to strengthen external audit processes. And this is the year we will turn the tide of corruption in our public institutions. And in many ways, Chairperson and Honorable Members, this provides the brief for what the Department has to do between now and the election the next year, so that we can leave behind a reasonably solid platform for, Mr. Hendricks, sir, you're one slide ahead of me, so that we can actually leave behind a fairly stable set of entities, if that is at all possible. On the left-hand side of the slide, you will see that the way we interpret the mandate is to review the boards of all of these entities, and we'll give you a progress report in each instance, improve the operational efficiencies, and there are some examples of that where boards have undertaken the beginnings of this work, restore the financial sustainability and reduce the dependence on the fiscus. This is hard work, but we'll give you a progress report in that regard as well. Stamp out corrupt practices at SOCs, and this is largely through the many forensic reports that both the SOCs and other entities of government have been undertaking, and the kind of actions that boards, the new boards that have been put into place, have been taking as well, and we'll give you some progress in this particular regard as well. But I must point out that eradicating corruption is a difficult exercise, because many who are guilty or likely to be guilty of malfeasance in these entities are finding different ways of evading their responsibility in respect of what they've done in the past, or are beginning to create narratives and do even political mobilization in order to ensure that they gather new friends in order to defend themselves once the fingers begin to point in their particular direction. And the last point, to ensure that the mandates of these various entities are consistent with what the state's developmental agenda is. The next slide gives you an overview, Chair, of some of the challenges that the SOCs face. They're divided, as you can see on the left, into internal challenges and external factors as well. Internally, and we're very familiar with this in this committee, the issue of governance, and here by governance we mean the level of integrity and experience in boards and in management teams, the manner in which these boards have executed their fiduciary responsibilities, the extent to which the boards have also exercised oversight and provided leadership at a strategic level to the entities themselves, or even to the extent to which, as we have learned through the Eskom inquiry, the boards themselves or members of the boards have been participating or enabling corruption in one form or another. At the financial level, corruption and misgovernance and mismanagement has resulted in many of these entities finding themselves in extreme difficulty. And so, in many entities, insufficient revenue is being generated by the core business of these entities in order to cover all of their operational costs. And we then have a challenge in respect of, let's call it operational liquidity on the one hand, that is the funds that are required to undertake the day-to-day operations. In some instances, there isn't money on a month-by-month basis to even pay salaries, so management teams and boards in the beginning of a month hustle around to financial institutions and others in order to find the cash that is required to actually pay salaries. And yet in other instances, creditors are not being paid by some of these entities as well, which has other implications for the operations of the entity. The other internal factor that we mention here is the operations of these entities, and we'll give you some examples as we go into the details, where there will be delays or cost overruns. I think you've had that in Transnet in terms of the pipeline. You've had that in Eskom in relation to Medupi, for example. But there are similar features elsewhere in some of the entities as well. Failure to keep up with technological improvements in that particular field that the entity operates is another serious challenge, because if that adaptation doesn't happen fast enough, these entities tend to fall behind in terms of their ability to generate the right kind of revenue to keep themselves sustainable at the end of the day. The word strategy, of course, is often used to indicate a so-called turnaround or a new direction that we want to actually take. But once we have boards that are ill-equipped to provide the right kind of leadership to entities, then strategically these entities fall behind as well, and they are unable to keep in touch with and in line with developments in the specific industries that they actually work in. The external factors, excuse me, these are issues that government as a whole is going to begin to attend to, as I will indicate later on, and that is the question of clarification around mandates, clarification around where investments take place by SOCs. So what you might find in some instances is that there might be two or more SOCs or SOEs that are creating the same kind of manufacturing capability, and if there were better synergies amongst them, you could save a fair amount of cash on the one hand and introduce a lot of efficiencies as well. But these are matters that government is aware of and will be dealing with in due course as we go forward. Similarly, accountability lines get blurred sometimes. Again, this is partly a consequence of what has happened in the state capture process, as this committee is very familiar with. And once you have people in the executive who might be more than just tolerant of what is going on in some of these entities, then you have a toxic mixture which impacts on the quality and nature of governance and oversight that is supposed to be actually exercised. Similarly, there are policy issues and regulatory issues. One of the biggest challenges that we face as we go forward is the question of administered prices, for example, which has an impact upon the economy more generally. So some entities have been increasing their revenue not because of additional, let's call it, sales or higher volumes of what they are doing, but by increased tariffs. But the increased tariffs also have an impact on the rest of the economy and the competitiveness of the South African economy more broadly as well. And the last but most not insignificant challenge is in respect of financing, both in the short term and in the long term. And in each of the entities, we're beginning to grapple with, on the one hand, short-term financial stability, but on the other hand, long-term financial sustainability. And of course, the long-term financial sustainability is dependent upon the kind of business and operating model that each of these entities actually work with. And so the new boards have to deal with the past in some ways, in terms of dealing with corruption and other issues. They have to deal with the present, which is trying to get the businesses back on their feet and ensure they can generate enough revenue to meet their operating expenses. And they have to deal with the future in terms of dealing with the strategic questions and challenges that each of these entities and their industries are actually confronted with. So you will see this pattern emerging in each of the entities as we go forward. So the next slide is just a reminder to ourselves that we've been in office for just over 5 months, and during these, this time, several of the boards have changed, some before some of us took office. For example, Eskom changed in January this year. Some during this five-month period, like Denel, Transnet, and SA Express. And there are still further changes that will happen to SAFCOL and the Alexco boards in the course of the next 4 to 6 weeks. As we get into Eskom, you will see that not only has the board changed, but they've appointed a new CEO and COO. There are resignations in some of the entities. For example, the Denel CEO resigned, as did the Transnet CFO. The Denel CFO is currently undergoing a disciplinary process as well, and similar things will begin to happen elsewhere in these entities as we go forward. But essentially in this five-month period, the basic theme would be dealing with the past, surviving the present, and creating the basis for sustainability into the future. So let me quickly take you through each of the entities, Chair. Firstly, Eskom, and there's a graphic on the next that slide, which indicates, in case we might not be familiar with this, that Eskom operates 25 power plants, and you can see the majority of them are concentrated around the Mpumalanga area. You can study that in your own time. The next slide is an interesting comparison over a 10-year period, and which in some ways spells out the dilemmas that the Eskom board has to deal with. This we've got from a professor at the UCT Business School. Forgive the secret that's at the bottom, because we're not in a public domain, so it's not a secret document any longer. But total installed capacity in 2007 versus 2017 is 42,000 versus 44,000. Actual sales, you'll see, has declined, 218,000 gigawatts per hour compared to 214 in 2017. But if you look at the revenue over that 10-year period, it's approximately 40 billion versus 177 billion. So it's a four times increase. The average selling price has increased from 18 cents to 83 cents. Coal purchases, in terms of metric tons, is approximately the same, 117 and 120. Coal costs, however, have gone up about five times. 10 billion rands versus 50 billion rands. Employee costs have gone up about three times, 9 billion versus 33 billion. Employee numbers have increased massively, 32,000 versus 47,000. And borrowing clearly has increased quite substantially as well, 40 billion to 355 billion. So it's an interesting comparison over a 10-year period. And this is what creates the dilemma for the current Eskom board and management and government as a whole in terms of how do we move forward. For example, what do we do to increase revenue? How can you increase sales, not increase revenue just because of additional tariffs, but additional volumes being actually sold? Similarly, how do we ensure that coal costs don't move in the kind of direction that is indicated here? And there have been some challenges in this regard, which the coal supply industry hasn't done too well at, and which Eskom is working on, and hopefully in the next 6 to 8 weeks we can come back to you, or the Eskom board can come back to you with a report in this particular regard. Employee cost is a major, after the coal cost, the major cost item that Eskom has to deal with. And what we have here is a significant increase in the management layers of Eskom. But these are all issues that the Eskom board and management is beginning to deal with. The next slide gives you some indication of the financial ratios as far as Eskom is concerned. So EBITDA is earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization. And it's a concept used to decide whether a business is profitable or not. And currently, you'll see that Eskom finds itself at a point where it's about 26% EBITDA, whereas it needs to get closer to 35 to 40 percent. And you can see how net profit has been declining to the point where in the just the past financial year you've actually had a loss as far as Eskom is concerned. And this is the structural financial challenge that Eskom has to deal with, and when the board appears before you, they can give you more details about some of the strategies that they're developing to manage this particular situation. The next slide, which is the colorful one, gives you the performance of Eskom as the department sees it in the various KPA categories that you see on your left-hand side. So there have been some improvements in operations, some improvement in the delivery of capital expansion, although there are other challenges in that particular regard as well. And if you take a problem area, it would be the road to rail. In other words, there's still too much of coal that is being transported by road, with the consequent damage to roads and the cost of repairs and resurfacing of the roads as opposed to the use of rail. Financial sustainability is at the 80% level. You can see in terms of human capital, there are still challenges. And overall, Eskom has been subpar in terms of its performance. The next slide gives you an indication of the audit outcome that Eskom has had over the last three financial, or this particular financial year of 17-18. And the important thing that Eskom will clarify when they come before you is that on the financials themselves, on the performance side, the report was unqualified. On the PFMA side is where, because of irregular expenditure, the audit opinion was qualified. And there's been quite a significant increase in irregular expenditure, as you will see on this slide, from 3 billion up to almost 20 billion rands. Now, there's a pattern here, Chair, that you will see amongst many of the entities, that as new boards come into place and as the audit profession is being brought into question about the way they've been auditing SOCs over the last 5 or 6 years and their, let's call it inability at this point in time, to actually uncover corruption and state capture through the course of their audits. You will have instances where in the previous year there were zero irregular expenditure, and suddenly it will jump to 2, 3, 4, 5 billion rands irregular expenditure in the latest financial year. So you can see, clearly see that the audit profession is beginning to do its work more properly. But as a committee, you will see how these numbers begin to emerge, particularly as Transnet comes along and presents their numbers to you, as do other entities as well. So this is a significant pattern that has emerged in the course of the last few months. The next slide gives you a sense for the directors and the demographic makeup. And as much as possible, in the team of directors that we are putting together as government, because these are all approved by cabinet, they're not any individual's choices. There's a mixture of business experience, specific qualifications as far as chartered accountants or HR or technical knowledge is concerned, a balance at a gender level, but also special consideration being given to young professionals to gain experience on the boards of these entities as well. So in this particular case, as I said, you have a new group chief executive, Mr. Hadebe. They've appointed a new chief operating officer, Mr. Overholzer, and the acting CFO is Mr. Kasim at this point in time until they complete the search process. The next slide indicates some of the work that the Eskom board has done over the last 6 months or so as their contribution to begin to come to terms with the corrupt practices within this organization. I won't go through all of these instances, but 10 executives have already left in many cases just before their disciplinary hearings were due to start. 11 criminal cases have been opened, and 5 of which involve 9 senior executives. Over 1,000 disciplinary cases have been noted since April 2018. And 628 have been finalized, and 75 employees have exited from Eskom. 239 whistleblowing cases, 122 of which have been concluded, and 67 have been confirmed as cases that need to be pursued towards the disciplinary process. At this stage, 25 staff are doing business with Eskom. 7 of them have exited, but I'm sure there's many more that we need to deal with. Eskom is the first of the entities to conduct lifestyle audits at a senior management level. I think they're about to complete this particular process, and I'm sure when they come to you, they can provide you with details in terms of what the nature of a lifestyle audit is, how they check bank accounts, motor car possession, property possession of both the principal and the spouse in each of these cases, and by then hopefully they have some report from the firm that is undertaking lifestyle audits on behalf of the board. The other trend that you will see, Chair, in each of these entities is the way in which boards are beginning to look into supplier contracts. So a lot of malfeasance crept in over the years, which resulted in loss of money, excessive charges being imposed, or middle persons being involved in the supply of equipment or goods or services to these entities. And so far, in the case of Eskom, they've recovered the 902 million rands from McKinsey. But there's still a lot more that needs to be done in relation to some of the other entities like Regiments, Trillion, and others that have entered into contracts with Eskom as well. They are also very so-called reputable companies that haven't quite featured in the public domain yet, particularly in relation to IT systems. I think we saw some of that during the inquiry, T-Systems, for example, SAP as well. And so that's another area of interrogation that still needs to be concluded as we go forward. Not only is the board undertaking some of this investigative work, but as you know, the SIU and others are also undertaking one or other kind of forensic investigation as we go forward. The next slide indicates that despite the problems that we've had at Eskom, with the appointment of the new board and executive and the turn of events in the country, there is a higher level of optimism as far as Eskom is concerned amongst the investor community. They have been able to raise funds to place themselves in a better position in relation to liquidity. In the last few weeks, the Eskom team has been on a roadshow to the UK and the US, and they've successfully concluded a 1.5 billion rand international, that's dollars, international bond. And some of the issues which investors raised with the Eskom team are the ones listed here. Would you have continued government support? What is the future role of Eskom? How are you going to collect municipal debt? The unsustainable cost structure, which I indicated earlier on, and some of the announcements around debt equity swaps in relation to the PIC, for example. The board has been asked to submit a new strategy for the next 5 years by the end of September. We've had one joint consultation in this particular regard, and more will follow. And we'll brief the committee as soon as we've reached some point, not only within Eskom, but within government as a whole as we go forward. The next entity is Transnet. The Transnet AGM takes place later this afternoon in Gauteng. But you also have a new board in the case of Transnet. What you have before you on the slide that's on the screen is, again, a five-year overview of Transnet's performance. And of particular concern, as I said, is administered prices, both in terms of freight and in terms of port charges. And clearly, the Transnet management and board have become very aware of some of the inefficiencies in the freight logistics system. In recent times, there have been a number of derailments which have been costly not only for Transnet, but costly for mining houses and the country. Because once you have a derailment that is not fixed up in a rapid period, then it impacts upon exports from the country, and that impacts upon the current account balance at a macro level. There's similar issues of performance and productivity in the ports as well, which Transnet will have to deal with in the near future. So you can see that Transnet performance against the shareholder compact is less than satisfactory, but there are serious issues that have emerged out of three forensic reports that are now before the board in relation to the so-called 1064 transaction, where you had an increase in cost from 38 billion to 54 billion. And the people responsible for that are being looked at by the board. And more generally, contract management and deviations similar to the ones I indicated earlier on about irregular expenditure will begin to emerge here as well. The one thing that Transnet and Eskom were both reputed to have is interference by the board in procurement, and that is something that we have now dealt with. whilst the board will have oversight to ensure that processes have been followed correctly and the law has been followed correctly, they cannot, as they have had in the past, interfere and decide upon how procurement allocations actually occur. The next slide looks at some of the changes that have been made. The new board appointed in May 2018. The CFO resigns shortly after, Mr. Peter, and we have an acting CFO in the case, in the instance of Mr. Mohammadi, who has been at Transnet for many years. Improved oversight on contact management and deviations, the forensic investigations which I indicated to you earlier on, removal of board members from adjudication of procurement contracts, and criminal charges and have been laid at the door of SAPS and the Hawks, and a review of procurement and other processes has been undertaken by the board as well. The next slide gives you an insight into the board and the kind of balances that we have, both in gender terms and in age terms as well, although that's not properly reflected here. But once the Transnet AGM takes place, Chair, there will be more details by the time Transnet reports to the committee on what needs to be done. But Transnet is a very crucial entity, just as Eskom is for the economy, because a large percentage of our exports consist of raw commodities, and any disruption of that process in the freight rail system would be having a negative impact on the economy. Similarly, the export of manufactured goods would have an impact as well. And then the efficiency of our ports is also absolutely crucial to ensure that our ports remain competitive and highly efficient, because there are similar facilities being developed elsewhere on the African continent. And if we are not at par, if not beyond par, in terms of our performance, we'll begin to lose ground very easily to neighboring port facilities that are being established. We then move on to SA Express.
It's Women's Month. I cannot have women standing for such a long time. There are two empty chairs. Can I have those chairs being offered to the back?
It's perfectly fine. Thank you. I'm drunk.
Can you join the seat so that she can get a seat?
Yeah, it should be the men pointing that out, you know.
Thank you very much. May continue, Minister.
So my apologies, Chair. I'm busy looking at the paper in front of me and not realizing women are standing. SA Express, as you know, has been grounded, but we are in the happy situation where all of the processes that are necessary to get it flying again have been concluded, and the first flights should begin sometime next week. So that's a huge achievement. Some people, I'm sure, are very happy that we have it flying again. So let me take you through the slides very quickly. The first of the slides on SA Express give you an indication of their performance. And here again, it's a classic case of several generations, if you like, of either incompetent or distinctly trying to choose my words carefully, but managers who lack the level of integrity that was required, all sorts of funny contracting that has taken place around fuel and other facilities that I'll point out in a moment, all of which, if you remember my point earlier on about the task of the new boards, the past, the present, and the future, have still to be uncovered and dealt with, and the individuals responsible also dealt with. But we will see some action in this particular regard in a very short while. The second of the slides after this one, which looks at the operational performance of SA Express, indicates the kind of decline that you've had in passenger volumes on the one hand, and the grounding that I've spoken of, and also we put together an intervention team, and I must tell you, Chairperson, that we had a real Tumamina team, where one big corporate lent us a senior executive free of charge for over 6 weeks, who was very familiar with aviation, another retired executive who today is now the acting CEO of SA Express, Mr. Mzimela, also came on board free of charge.
This must be applauded. It's a real Tumamina.
So I'm sure there are many other South Africans who would like to volunteer their services in this kind of way, and that helped us to have a very effective team on the ground, together with one of the DDGs who's been assigned and who now moves on to the presidency, who was there from, I think, about January this year as well. So we must thank her for her contribution as well. The next slide looks at the financial performance. So apart from getting all the licensing sorted out with the South African Civil Aviation Authority, we also face liquidity challenges in SA Express. And despite the fact that we have a 1.74 billion rand guarantee from government, there are challenges in terms of paying salaries, there are challenges in terms of paying for some parts, which are actually required. And at the moment, even after we get all of the current processes going, only 9 of the aeroplanes would be flying out of a total of 22. So you have a staffing structure to cater for 22 aircraft, but you actually have only 9 flying, and you can see the disjuncture between the two. In some ways. There have also been, as you know, in the past, going concern challenges, and this committee has been given all sorts of assurances about turnarounds in the past. The high cost structure, which is a feature of many of the state-owned entities, is also something that plagues this organization as well. But as we begin to fly, then the revenue will improve, and that will begin to lighten the financial burden in some ways. But, and I'll come back to this point in the end, we've got to look at a more efficient way in which the state manages its 3 aviation outfits, Mango, SAA, and SAA Express. As I pointed out earlier on, the last bullet point here makes reference to high levels of corruption or dubious contracts being signed in terms of fuel, baggage, acquisition of parts, and it involves both officials in SA Express but the private sector as well. You have a similar pattern again on the next slide in relation to the discovery of irregular expenditure, and the numbers are in front of you, and similarly in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure as well. In terms of the next slide, we have a new board, but what we don't have at the moment is a permanent CEO and CFO, but this is what the new board will begin to deal with soon. And we also have a deficit in terms of technically competent senior managers. people who actually have airline experience can run an airline and competently address some of the challenges that SA Express actually has. So if we look at the last few months and what has been done in summary on the next slide, you'll see the appointment of a new board in May 2018 by Cabinet, the intervention team that I made reference to that worked with the existing management team, and now that Ms. Mzimela takes over, you'll see further changes in this regard as well. So she's the interim CEO and is willing to give us a few months of her time while we find a more permanent CEO for this position. There are initial discussions that have taken place with the SAA board, and a further discussion will actually take place tomorrow with myself and the DPE team, and we're looking for, if you like, quick saving mechanisms or synergies between SAA and SAA Express, and already the two boards have agreed on certain joint committees that they will create in order to find areas of rationalization and overlaps that they can actually begin to deal with. Some of the other challenges that I indicated here is renegotiation of unfavorable contracts with suppliers. For some reason, in the state, we are weak in terms, or not as aggressive as we should be, in terms of ensuring that we get the best deal possible from suppliers, which is a feature, I believe, of international airlines. Reduce employee costs. And we'll come back to you in terms of exactly how the board proposes to do that. Renegotiate better fuel rates. What's interesting at the moment, it would appear, is that each of the three state-owned airlines gets fuel at different prices. And that's something that we need to look into very quickly and find the cheapest way of acquiring fuel. And as I said, the licensing that is required has now been awarded to SA Express to fly again. Next slide answers the question up to a point about where are we taking as government the three aviation entities that government owns 100%, SAA, SA Express, and Mango. So initially we have the move of SAA back to the Department of Public Enterprises, so at least all of the entities are accountable to one department. But pretty soon, with the Presidential SOC Council, which I will outline later, a strategy will emerge in terms of how we deal with these three entities and ensure that over time they all become properly sustainable. The next entity is Alexco, and the first of the slides under Alexco indicate both for Alexco and the joint venture with the community the kind of performance that the organization has been delivering up to the last financial year. I'm not going to go through the details. The slide after, I'm afraid those graphs are not Alexco graphs, so please delete them. Or strike them off. We accidentally, in the rush, put in the wrong graphs there, but what we can say to you is that the board completes its three-year tenure shortly, and Cabinet will give consideration to a new board in the next couple of weeks. The CEO and CFO positions were filled in December 2017, but here again, irregular and wasteful expenditure becomes a particular feature. We elaborate on this in the next slide, where some consideration needs to be given to an appropriate governance model, because as you know, we have a, if you like, shared responsibility between the Richtersveld community on the one hand and the state on the other hand, and joint operations which overlap with both of the entities. So we'll be looking at that chair over the next few weeks as we look at reconstituting the board as we go forward. There are interactions currently with the Department of Rural Development in order to intervene and normalize the community entities created by the deed of settlement. I know several honorable members have been asking questions about this area, but it's not moving as fast as we would like. And in many of these situations, as you know, you could have very different and contending views about who should benefit and who shouldn't benefit. So that's one of the issues that we need to resolve, hopefully quicker than we are currently doing so. And that process will actually then inform how the 45 million rands that many of you have been inquiring about is distributed to beneficiaries in the Richtersveld community. There are also some corruption issues that is being looked into by the SIU, but in the next slide we indicate some of the concerns that the department has in relation to the sales and marketing process and the contracting that has happened in that particular regard as well. And we are in the process of appointing a legal firm to investigate various allegations about both the mining process on the one hand and the sales process on the other hand, to assure ourselves and the public, and in particular the community of Richtersveld, that they're getting the optimum benefit from the mining processes. We then move on to Danel. In the first of the Danel slides, indicate to you that, like SA Express, it is also facing a squeeze in terms of liquidity. And in both instances, as I indicated to you earlier on, boards and management scrambled around for funds at the beginning of the month so that they can actually pay salaries by the time either the middle or the latter part of the month actually comes up. But in addition, as the slide indicates, we have 1.1 billion rands that is unpaid to creditors. And this becomes a vicious cycle ultimately, because you can't produce new goods if you don't get parts from the suppliers, and the suppliers won't give you parts if you haven't been able to pay your previous debt to them. And it's that vicious cycle that we need to get out of the near future. We've met with the chair of the board and the chair of the audit committee yesterday and shared some thoughts with them on how they could begin to move in a slightly different direction and more aggressively look at some of the solutions that they need to implement in the case of Danel. They will report on the revenue, but they're likely to report a loss for the 17-18 year. There was a reprieve granted by the National Treasury to the extent of 580 million rands in the third quarter. But Danel, honorable members, has to be, in a sense, part of the strategy clarity it requires is what is its function and how does it actually perform its function. Is it a manufacturing entity, or is it an assembling entity that gets parts from different places and assembles them? And if you're looking at synergies, there's a lot of synergies between parts of the Danel business and parts of, for example, the Transnet business. I'm sure many of you might have been to one or other Transnet manufacturing facility, for example, the one at Kudaspur, which has impressive production capabilities, which interestingly, the PRASA entity is now duplicating in Niger, in Gauteng. So that's something that government will be looking at shortly as well. The next slide indicates the way in which we've actually reconstituted the board. The management team is also fairly depleted, and the board is now going to move faster. As I indicated to you, the CEO resigned. The CFO is going through a disciplinary process. And in this particular instance, over the years, I'm not sure if the committee is aware, but not only do you have the sort of six divisions of Danel, but under some of those divisions, you have a lot of PTY companies, being established. And we are now, together with the board, interrogating each of those to ask the question, do they really need to exist as separate companies, or do they actually get absorbed into the divisions, and how do we rationalize many of the entities that we actually find often quite hidden from the public view in some ways. Here again, irregular expenditure will be a feature, and there are some forensic reports that have been done in the past which indicate that there are corrupt practices that need to be looked at, which the board will begin to do as well. And as I indicated, the irregular expenditure for 16-17 was 116 million. But I'm sure these numbers will change as the more recent financials are looked at. But no criminal charges have been laid yet, either in respect of the previous board or the management team in this particular regard, but that's something that the new board will begin to attend to. The next slide gives you the performance of Danel in terms of the shareholder compact. You can have a look at that. The slide after that repeats the point about a board being established in May by Cabinet. The resignation of the group CEO in May this year, the CFO being placed on leave and facing disciplinary charges, the review of all of the forensic reports that are available at this point in time. Lifestyle audits are still to be commenced by the board itself. It basically doesn't have enough money to do this kind of work at this point in time, so hopefully sooner rather than later that should actually happen. But at a session that we had where we invited external experts in this particular industry a couple of weeks ago, where the department and the board had an opportunity to listen to these external experts, there are huge possibilities for Danel to do better and to find itself firmly on its feet again. And I'm confident that given a bit of time, we can actually do that. The next slide gives you an indication of the composition of the board itself. So in some chair, there are many innovative things that are happening in Danel. There are lots of very important intellectual property that resides within Danel itself that needs to be properly secured, because that's our national asset in some ways. And The corruption of the past, particularly led by some members of the previous board and executives, has done a significant amount of damage in slowing down Danel's agility and its ability to seize the opportunities that we have around us. In fact, there's any number of, let's call it interested parties, who would like a slice of Danel if they could get their hands on it. And this is an important national asset that we need to manage in a very careful way. We then move on quickly to SAFCO. And here again, we've met with the board recently, and the board's term of office also, or tenure, also expires shortly, and the AGM is due to be held later this month, or early in September, and the Cabinet will then appoint a new board for SAFCOL as well. There are clearly areas where the business could perform better than it is performing at the moment, and there are opportunities that they could seize that they are not quite doing well at. They also, as you know, have a plant in, or rather, a plantation in Mozambique, Ifloma, that they are managing, which has its own difficulties as well. But some of the executives are now beginning to deal with that challenge as we go forward. The next slide gives you the performance of SAFCOL against the compact. You can see a lot of reds that are featuring there. On the governance side, in the next slide, as I indicated, the board's tenure comes to an end shortly, and the board will be reconstituted and approved by cabinet, and we'll report to you on how that proceeds. There's been some delays in recruiting senior managers in the past, and there's still issues of strategy and internal controls and execution of ideas or strategies that serious areas that the new board will have to look into as we go forward. A CFO was nominated by the board, but the department was not happy with the person that was nominated, so there's further work to do in that particular area. And the graphs on the right-hand side give you some idea of the revenue situation and the loss or profit situation over the last few years. And similarly here, irregular expenditure will feature once again. So we're now beginning to get to the concluding part. So the next slide gives you an idea of each of the entities on the left-hand side and their aggregate performance up to the year 17-18. And one of the things that all the boards are going to be asked to look at much more carefully is the remuneration patterns in each of these entities. We do have a remuneration policy adopted by Cabinet in 2016, but that is not being properly implemented by the respective boards. And a culture has emerged in many of these entities where, notwithstanding poor overall performance, as we indicate in red here, you actually get bonuses paid and sometimes bonuses demanded as well. The next two slides, Chair, are a summary of some of the recommendations from the Presidential Review Commission and the diagnostic that it actually undertook and the interventions that have followed the Review Commission's findings. So we'll leave that for your reading pleasure. And the third but last point I want to make is the next one. The President has established the Presidential SOC Council, and its function, once it gets off the ground, will be to stabilize those SOEs that find themselves in one or other kind of crisis, begin to develop a key, the key strategic focus of each of the SOEs and look at where the overlaps and the alignment between SOEs can actually occur. Look at the financing of each of these entities and how they can be made sustainable over a period of time. And look at specific sectors such as the airlines, the rail sector, the energy sector, and so on, which could benefit from a kind of helicopter view of what's happening in each of those sectors as far as the state is concerned and how best to manage the state assets and institutions that are involved. Many of the bigger entities also have, for example, number 11, an Africa strategy, but many of them operate in their own silos at this point in time. So there are huge possibilities for cooperation and synergies as we go forward. If you ask us at this point in time, how do we actually see the reform process for SOCs and the repositioning of SOCs so that they reach a point where they are operationally efficient, they have a strategy that fits in with the current environment in which they operate, and are sustainable and not dependent upon the fiscus. Broadly, we would say that the first 6 months is about stabilization. It might take a little bit longer than that, depending on the level of corruption that has actually occurred. And I think we need to remind ourselves that corruption is just not about stealing a few rands and cents and pocketing them. It has a devastating effect on the institutions. It actually removes competent managers. It replaces good people on boards with people who have the wrong intentions, as this committee has learned very well through the Eskom inquiry. It begins to generate a culture where the national interest or the interest of the institution comes second or third. Stealing becomes the most important thing, either for oneself or for one's partners in a particular approach. And as far as the public is concerned, corruption means less housing, less money for education, and all of the facilities which many of our people actually don't have at this particular point in time, and in particular given the kind of fiscal constraints that we actually face. But corruption also means that we are not allowing the economy to grow. A few favored people get the contracts as opposed to actually generating more and more businesses and supporting innovative entrepreneurs so that they would grow both small businesses and medium-sized businesses and begin to expand the job creation possibilities within our economy as well. Of course, those who have benefited from these practices of corruption within the institutions are going to lose out. So in all of these reform processes, there are winners and there are losers. And we need to ensure that this process results in the majority of South Africans being the winners, whilst there's going to be a few losers. But the few losers don't take kindly to the fact that they're going to be losers. And so all sorts of narratives will develop to defend their interests in this particular regard. So I think if we understand both as the committee, but also more generally, that possibly the next 6 to 9 months is about moving through a transition during which we need to stabilize institutions, as I said, clean up as much of the past as possible, deal with some of the challenges of the present, and position the institution for sustainability into the future, then you'll see that these three stages that we outline, which is open for debate, is possibly the kind of direction that we actually want to go in. So let me end by saying that the Presidential SOC Council will make a big difference in terms of the way in which SOCs generally are dealt with by government in due course, and that each of the boards are becoming more and more clear about what some of their responsibilities are, and the department itself is beginning to strengthen its capabilities to maintain the kind of oversight that is actually required. But Chair, what this transition period also needs, if we are to stabilize the situation, particularly where you don't have enough money in the state to have bailouts given free of charge continuously, is a recognition that all of the stakeholders will have to make some sacrifices as we go forward, so that we find ourselves in a position where it's easier to get to the point of sustainability, both in the short and in the medium term as well. A classic example would be like the kind of benefits that top executives in many of these entities assign to themselves, and which are not transparent in many instances. Short-term incentives, long-term incentives, security guards, and all sorts of things have crept into the system. And even as a department, we can't say we know and understand all of the things that are really going on in terms of the way in which benefits have actually accrued, whilst ordinary workers then begin to suffer as a result of the accumulation that takes place at the top. The other area is clearly the manner in which audits have taken place in the past, and I think the committee might want to consider, together with maybe other sister committees, an interaction with some of the audit firms. Why have they not been reporting the things we are discovering today? why is it that suddenly irregular expenditure reaches double figures in terms of billions of rands that have not been spent properly or followed proper processes where they weren't discovered earlier on as well? A third area is clearly procurement, where on the one hand you don't want board involvement, but on the other hand what we require is better synergies amongst, for example, the airlines, so that they can benefit from collective bargaining, if you like, and a lot more aggressive contracting, so that the state gets the benefit of the kind of competitive prices that it can actually attract. The other feature that we will look at a lot more closely and come back to the committee on is the economic role and the developmental role of SOEs. So we're finding that as part of this malfeasance that went on in some of the entities that you are now familiar with, for example, localization as an economic objective was just set aside. Things were just imported rather than manufacturing capabilities of South African firms being used and expanded and jobs being created in South Africa for some of the products that these SOEs actually acquire. So a lot more needs to be done, both by yourselves but also by the boards, in terms of promoting manufacturing, promoting localization, and building small and medium-sized businesses on a more expansive scale than we have actually done up to this point in time. A lot more work, of course, also needs to be done in terms of the kind of culture that might have crept into many of these institutions as a result of 7 or 8 years of state capture. And I think the full consequences are still to be understood by all of us, and how we eradicate or transform this culture is going to be a big challenge. But I'm convinced that the majority of people that work in many of these institutions are good, honest South Africans that want to see these institutions working. But their voices need to be heard a lot more loudly than we might be doing at this point in time. The department will be setting up a whistleblowing hotline, separate from anything that any one of the entities that might be doing so, and we'll announce the details of that soon, so that we give more people an opportunity to provide information that will lead to uncovering more of the nonsense that has in fact been going on in some of these institutions. What else do we have to say? On the financial stability side, notwithstanding some of the immediate liquidity challenges, there's an interesting interaction between National Treasury, our department, and the financial sector that is going on at the moment. And hopefully that interaction will result in a formula which will enable both fiscal resources but also private sector resources to be utilized to reposition many of the entities that might find themselves in short-term difficulty as we face right now. But all in all, the SOCs have a lot of potential to do the right thing, to contribute to economic growth and job creation in South Africa, and we will start focusing on that a lot more over the next few months. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Godan, the Minister of Public Enterprises, with an understanding that today you have a cabinet lekhotla. I'm not sure. Are you not here? No, not today. By 12. Okay. In that order, members?
I'm number one. Yes. Okay. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. And thanks to the Minister for the presentation. It has actually given us a proper understanding of what is happening within the SOEs. But Minister, I have noticed that I don't see any of the board members, whether new or old, from the entities, but maybe it's cost cutting or any other reason. There may be a reason for them not to come through to this meeting. To me, it is so important. It was really, for me, important for them to listen to what you have presented so that they understand what they need to do to bring our SOEs to a better position to what they are now. But as that may be, I will then continue with my questions. I've got actually, Chairperson, I'm worried when the Minister says he has to take a flight at 12 because I've got almost a question for each and every slide that he has presented, but I will limit myself to a few. The SOEs, Minister, you just said they can't borrow their way every now and again out of their financial difficulties. Is there any other way, with the current situation that they are in, is there any other way that they can pull themselves out of the situation or out of the mess now, rather than getting a financial assistance from the government? If there is any, how do they feel about the other way of getting money or of getting financial assistance from anywhere except the government? When you describe the challenges of the SOEs, on one of your slides, I think you described the past situation within the SOEs. The current situation is better than what you have presented to us. I assume so, because there are more changes that have happened as from May up until now. At least there is a slight challenges that have happened. With the appointment of the CEO, Honorable Minister, in Eskom, is the appointment now clear on what his situation is? Remember, when the inquiry started, the main problem was the pension fund of the then CEO of Eskom. Did we sort out everything that will have a problem in future, or that would be a similar problem that we had before the new CEO, the then CEO, Honorable, because he was an honorable member, Mr. Molefe, because we need to sort that out, and he needs to be cleared, and he must understand what the situation would be after his appointment. Even if it's after 5 years or after 10 years or after 20 years, he must know what is expected of him and what he is going to get out of the work that he's doing. In the appointment of the The slide 14 shows us the employee numbers from 2007 to 2017. The growth of the I take it is the growth of the employees. Did that also impact on the situation of is it bloated? Did it have an impact on the situation that we have now at Eskom? Mr. Singh has resigned, Minister. Any investigations that are directly to him. In your presentation, you spoke about executives that are under investigation. I understand. But when you say you are rounding them up in saying executives, you're not saying anything about the middle managers. The executive were giving directives to the middle managers. The middle managers were implementing what the wrongs that the executive have given, the directives that the executive, the wrong directives that the executives have given them. What is happening in the middle management? Those people who are working with Mr. Singh in Eskom, who are middle managers, what is happening with them?
Let me go to...
Have you any explanation to us of what is happening with the workers of SAX now that the flights were grounded? Their offices were closed in our airports. What happened to their workers? What is the situation now? Are they all coming back when the work is starting, or few of them are coming back, and maybe the others are being laid? Chair, let me stop there. I just want to check my notes. Can if there comes a second round, I will take it. If there is no second round, then I don't mind. I will write the questions down.
Just to remind members that the entities are still coming within the August. Almost all of them will have an opportunity to engage them on specific issues that have been raised by the minister on their performances. Thank you very much. In that order, members, Honorable Mazwane, it's your turn.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the minister. Minister, I'd like to, I'm going to concentrate only on one area because we've got a certain amount of time. And that is my concern about the charges that have been laid against various companies and various officials that worked within the Department of Public Enterprises and within the entities themselves. Now, just to give you a brief example, under Transnet, and this is just charges that I've personally laid, I laid charges against Mr. Malefi, Mr. Gama, Mr. Gianni, because of the South Rail kickbacks, the so-called kickbacks. At Eskom, we laid charges against Trillion, McKinsey. We added supplementary affidavits, Mr. Singh, Mr. Molefe, Mr. Coco, Homex, the Bank of Baroda, and so the list goes on. I laid charges against SAP and CAD, all of the IT-linked houses. I have case numbers for all of these charges that we've laid. And in actual fact, my colleague and friend sitting next to me informed me that this morning the Hawks were briefing the police committee on some of the charges. I believe that they gave a very brief synopsis of a few of the charges that they're dealing with, and most of them are under investigation. But Minister, I would suggest that perhaps it's time for me and your DG to sit down so that I can hand over to your department all the affidavits that I handed in, give them the case numbers, because I think that this is going to be one of those instances where we have to be Team South Africa, and perhaps, you know, if we club together our affidavits and the information we have, we can simply make those cases stronger. Because I think the general frustration, both in Parliament and certainly in the public, is that we've laid these charges, we've gone through a whole process, and still not a single person has been arrested yet. And that's what is frustrating us, is where are the arrests? Why are people not in jail? In line with that, Minister, for example, the 1.1 million rand bursary that the Denel head used for his son to be, for pilot's training, we now know that that particular individual resigned. But has that 1.1 million rand bursary been paid back? You know, these are some of the simple examples, and I know we've got to the stage now where we talk about billions, and millions seem to be small change. But, you know, 1.1 million rand bursary should be going to another deserving South African. So these are questions that we need to look at. Minister, I'm incredibly concerned about the status of ESCOM. I think that the board has done incredible work so far, and I'm very happy with what the board has produced. But what does worry me is the violence and vandalism that has come out of the recent wage negotiations. Now, I'm the first one to say, and I agree with my colleague, Ms. Rantel, that middle management needs to take a lot of the blame for these instances. And certainly what you said was very promising in that, the bonuses and the extras given to top management, you know, would be looked at and scrutinized very carefully to make sure that workers are benefiting and not just top and middle management. However, when you have units at Kusile being set on fire, this holds the entire country to ransom, and certainly that can never be allowed. So can you just give us some indication as to where we are in terms of the violence and the actual holding of ransom that South Africa experienced with the recent load shedding epidemic that we had? Minister, also the one thing that I appreciated about the board of ESCOM, as soon as we got there, they were open and honest with us. There was nothing hidden. What was bad was told to us, what was good was told to us. But now we have a situation where, and I don't know why it's happening, where there seems to be a reluctance to communicate with this committee about the loans that ESCOM is getting. Now, we can only assist on what we know. And I think that this committee needs to be briefed fully on the loans that ESCOM is getting, especially the larger loans like the 33 billion rand loans that are coming in from China. We need to be briefed as to what the terms and conditions are of that loan and how we can expect things to be paid back, because at the end of the day we have to make sure that electricity prices aren't overinflated because of these kind of actions. You know, it's part of our oversight. And Minister, you were in this committee for a while. You know how seriously this committee takes its oversight duty. Chair, and then I'm going to end off there because I think I've asked a lot of questions, but my final question will be this. Minister, your department sits in an interesting situation where many of the entities that you oversee have staff that are in senior positions of these entities that were intrinsically involved in state capture. And I understand that you need to investigate and you can't sort of sweep in and wipe them all out, as I know you really would want to. But we do have instances where we as members of Parliament are being asked to engage with people in entities who we know to have been intrinsically involved in state capture. An individual that I have been told I have to deal with regarding a problem at Denel sat in a committee meeting and laughed at you and I while we were committee members. He is still there. I will not deal with him, Minister. I cannot deal with him. I cannot be expected to deal with him. So, Minister, if we can please look at, how we take, you know, these sort of instances, and I know you know exactly who I'm talking about, going forward, because it creates an incredibly difficult environment for us as members of Parliament to be able to execute our duty properly. Thank you.
You're welcome. Honourable Swart, is your turn.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Minister, for your input. Maybe at some stage, Chair, we will also discuss the going forward of our ESCOM inquiry, but that's not for now. I presume we will discuss that later. But, Minister, thank you. Yes, I just want to touch on a couple of issues. I was at the Hawks briefing this morning, and I did indicate some of the issues that are arising. And what is of great concern to me, and the issues that I've been raising right from the public protector's report into state capture at ESCOM, that prima facie evidence was available right then. In terms of the Public Protectors Act, that information was referred to the Hawks and the NPA. Almost 3 years later, was it 2 years, 3 years later, we still see very little progress. And this is a big concern. And whilst I appreciate there's a new Hawks general that gave his presentation this morning, but is this part of pushback that we are not seemingly to make progress with what to me as a lawyer are straightforward prima facie evidence that justifies an arrest at least and an appearance in court? When you look at these, for example, the briefing this morning was on Transnet, 38 billion rand. Now that information has been around for a long time. The information is details of suspects, none have yet been identified as yet. Now we even in our tentative touching of Transnet in our inquiries know who the people are involved. It's wide knowledge. Why would you say, and is this a situation that we faced with Transnet where we're talking about 38 billion rand? That is what is being investigated. And they've given us a progress report on that, and we know there's a new, and hopefully with a new head, they've got over their avian flu, and the hawks will fly. But it is a concern. It's a concern. Particularly when you see the speedy action that was taken against yourself on the PFMA. The hawks were very quick. You were, the investigation and then the putative prosecution was very quick in terms of the PFMA. Very, very quick, but we see nothing happening. I'd ask you to comment on that, particularly from what one hears in the media where you've been speaking about pushback against your steps to, and our steps as Team South Africa to try and contain state capture. The second issue relates to, that's the criminal side of things. Then we've got the civil side of things, where we've got the Asset Forfeiture Unit that is trying to do work. That's under the NPA. We've seen 900 million coming back from McKinsey, thankfully. But again, you know, it's a big concern for me. When are we going to start getting those other funds back? First step. Second issue. The declaration of directors that were criminally and civilly involved, they obviously, if they are found guilty, they'll never be able to serve as directors again. But those board members that negligently did not fulfill their fiduciary duties, can we expect applications in terms of Section 162 of the Companies Act that they will be declared delinquent directors? Those are the negligent, where you only have to prove negligence in non-compliance with your fiduciary duties. That we prevent the situation of directors hopping from one SOE, one company to the next. That is there. That is a provision that is there. And I do understand ESCOM is looking into that side of things, but what about our other SOEs? The one other aspect, very briefly, and I know we've got limited time, but you'll remember when you were part of the ESCOM inquiry, we were looking into the different contracts and I was linking the dots. And one of the issues you raised this morning was the concern of coal transport that was the transport costs. And it's very clear to me how those contracts were manipulated. The Optimum Hendrina contracts that were cancelled so that, and the Arnott, Exxaro, Mafube contracts. Remember, there's a conveyor belt there. Those contracts were cancelled. And I've urged the board to re-look at those. I don't have an intrinsic knowledge, but there you had existing contracts with conveyor belts that were cancelled to benefit certain people. I know you're not on hands-on management, but these are some of the issues that we'll raise with the board, but you did raise that. Is that something that one can re-look at, where there are power stations are built next to coal mines with conveyor belts? Suddenly we start to see this massive transport costs, and that to me is a massive concern. Is there something we can do about that? Lastly, the issue that you've been, maybe you'd like to just brief us as a committee, where you've been criticized, to me unfairly, in the media by the EFF, who were very strong in our inquiry. and you might even say it's not worth responding. But the allegations, very serious allegations that of reign of terror at SOEs, and it seems to be very linked to the SARS-Moyani issue. But you might not even want to, and I would understand if you didn't want to comment on that. But to me, considering the good work that you are doing in turning around the SOEs, it seems to be, is that part of the narrative that you were referring to? Control freak, these type of things. I think we need that type of control taken over the SOEs, considering where we are. And you, as shareholder representative, have also got a fiduciary duty to start turning around these SOEs. Thank you, Chairperson, for that. I hope I wasn't out of order in any way. Thank you.
Thank you. So, thank you. Thank you, Member. You are most welcome. And in that order, Honorable Wilson.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation by the Minister, and also to, on a positive note, to appreciate the measures that you have taken so far in stabilizing the entities and the department since your appointment. There are a few issues, Chair, that relates to the work of the entities and as presented this morning. And I want to start with ESCOM. I think we appreciate the 902 million recovered from McKinsey, but the 355,000 debt securities and borrowing is a worrying factor. It's an issue that will definitely need to be clarified at how best are we going to deal with this issue going forward. The presentation says in the last 10 years, it has gone from 40,000 to more than 355,000. To me, it's a worrying factor. So we might need to be clarified as to how best are we going to deal with this issue going forward. Obviously, we will need the last time we were told about DG's leak, Minister, we're told he's on leave, and we'll appreciate you can be clarified on the situation as of now, what is happening. If there are issues, what are those issues, and how far are we in attending to the issues, if there are issues. You know, the issue of the 45 million for the community of Richtersveld is an issue that has been with us for quite some time. It has been there in the minister's speeches, budget speeches. We have been talking about these issues in our BRRR, and really it's an issue that cannot be with us forever. Surely we need to find a solution to this issue. From the presentation, I'm begging to see exactly what is it that needs to be attended to as a matter of agents to address this particular issue. We have raised it in quite a number of our interactions with the department. You know, the denial is also a very serious worrying factor to me. The direct question will be, are the prospects of saving these valuable assets of people of South Africa? At some stage, they could not even pay the employees. We were later told no, there were some minor issues, and they were later attended to. And this morning, we were told over 1.1 billion or so still owed to the creditors. Are there prospects to save these valuable assets of people of South Africa? What is it that we need to attend to do to deal with this thing? Because surely we can't have an entity that surely relies on government guarantee. Something will have to be done. So the direct question is, are there prospects of saving it? To avoid a situation where we end up not having anything to rely on. The second last one is an issue that relates to the shareholder compacts. Looking at your slide 43, the summary of how the entities are performing, it shows that really there is a long way to go. And the reason why we have always been talking about this particular issue of the shareholder compacts is basically the reason that the issue that you raised this morning of the executives continue to get incentives despite non-performance. It can't be right. It can't be right. The report as well, the presentation says even compacts are not signed on time, but the executives continue to get incentives. Surely it's an issue that we're not proud of, and we'll have to find a way to attend to this particular issue. So the direct question is, what is it that we have done to attend to this particular aspect? They continue to get incentives when the compacts are not signed. We also don't have, we have raised them numerous occasions at the portfolio committee, that we'll appreciate a situation where these compacts are made available to us. How do we conduct oversight over entities that we don't have, of which we don't have the compacts, just to know what is it that has been agreed upon between the entities and the ministry. So I would appreciate if the minister can as well talk to that particular issue. I'm happy with your summary, which says the entities are coming anytime soon for us to continue interacting with them on quite a number of issues as raised by the minister this morning. For now, I think let me pause. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Honorable minister, I don't have questions. I'll exercise my right when the entities are here before us. But just to say one or two things, that on the restructuring of the airlines, just to get a clarity whether you anticipate that the conclusion of that exercise will be in this term of office, our term, the fifth parliament, or is something that it will be concluded by the next term. If it's going to be included in during our term, we welcome that. Only to say that it means more work. And the last one is just a general comment to say that we really appreciate the work that has been done by yourself and the department, especially yourself as the political head of the department, the intervention that you've made so far, assisted by the cabinet and the president himself, and intervening on the SOCs or SOEs. The achievements so far give the hope for the future. The plan that you have presented also give an assurance to us that there is a light in the tunnel, and we'll really monitor the progress as we go along. And you may now respond to the question that has been raised by the members. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the honourable members for the questions. Let me reiterate what you said early on, Chair, and that is that our aim today was to give you an overview, not to bring the board members here, for benefit of Honourable Ranto, so that you are better positioned when each of the entities comes to actually interrogate them further. So this is the, if you like, the, what do you call them, hors d'oeuvres, before you have the main meal a little bit later. So, but I take Honorable Ranto's point that they need to listen to what the approach of government is in respect of these SOEs, but that's certainly what we communicate when we meet with them, and one is hoping to get all of the boards together in the same room pretty soon so that we have the same guidelines given to everybody in their presence, whether it's about remuneration or anything else that we actually want to do. When you ask the question, and when the president actually says they can't just borrow their way out, what we actually mean is that each of these entities is a business at the heart of it, while they will have additional developmental responsibilities. And they must generate the appropriate level of revenue in order to cover their costs. But in most businesses today, whether it's in the private sector or these types of businesses, debt is an important part of the financing of activities, particularly not for consumption purposes. In other words, not to pay salaries and operating expenses, but for investment purposes. But our tragedy is that in many of these instances, the borrowing might be for paying salaries rather than actually investments in the capital infrastructure of these entities so that they can actually expand their businesses or reposition their businesses as they go forward. The ideal would be that they firstly generate enough revenue to meet their operating costs. Secondly, that they have a clear 5 or 10 year strategy or plan or roadmap in terms of where they want to go and undertake the investments that are necessary, both through their own money but also through the credibility that their balance sheets have on the basis of which lenders are willing to lend them money and as cheaply as possible so that it does the debt and the interest on the debt doesn't actually become a burden. So that's where we want to get to, if you like, ultimately. And the word bailout, hopefully in the next few years, must actually disappear from our language, ideally. Because you want to take the burden away from the fiscus. And the fiscus must be used for the purposes of implementing government programs at the end of the day. As far as the Eskom CEO is concerned, I've just got some clarity now. That is Mr. Hadebe. He's on contract for 3 years, which could be extended. And the board and he are currently in the process of concluding the details of the contract, and they hope to sign the contract pretty soon. So he's not a, inverted commas, permanent employee. Therefore, he's not in the same position, however he got there, that Mr. Molefe found himself in as a member of the pension fund and so on. So once the contract is ready, Chair, the board must give you the details, and let's be transparent about it. And that same transparency must apply to others as well. I think Mr. Molefe's case has had its own, let's put it politely, idiosyncratic character. It's gone to the courts, it's been dealt with, and you are familiar with some of the things that has actually led to, and the kind of gymnastics, if you like, that followed in that particular regard, which is symptomatic of the state capture process as well. The bloated senior executives, I mean, there are various numbers that you hear from Eskom, that 10 years ago, for example, the top management consisted of about 80 people. Today it consists of about 600 people. But when they come before you, they must give you exactly which bands are they talking about, what numbers are attached to those bands, what remuneration is attached to each of those bands, and what's the cost of the top management bands versus the rest of the employees as well. And the board will be very willing to share that information with you when they actually arrive. You asked the question, what happened to those who worked with Mr. Singh or Mr. Molefe and others in the middle management? I imagine that some of the numbers that we gave you in the slide of people who've been either going through disciplinary processes or have just left because they know that they would get caught anyway, are the people who've been implicated in one or other activity. But cleaning up the fast is not going to be easy, because you've also got to face the challenges of the current period. And I think the board certainly have the determination to do as much cleaning up as is possible. But let us also remember that we now have a judicial commission into state capture, run by the Deputy Chief Justice. The staff has hearings next week. And some of these matters are going to be aired in that forum as well. And there will be consequences that follow arising from evidence that is presented to the commission as we go forward. As far as South African Express is concerned, no worker has been laid off. The offices might have been closed because there's no tickets to sell. But they would all start opening soon, as I think they're hoping to actually initiate two routes next week, and then week by week increase the number of routes that SA Express begins to operate on once again, which will mean that those that are at the core of the business will be now engaged in meaningful activity at the end of the day. But at the same time, as I pointed out earlier on, both at a relatively senior level and elsewhere, there's a lot of cleaning up to do in SA Express. And that maybe the committee will send a nice loud message that those who've been guilty of wrongful activity as far as contracts and procurement and so on are concerned should just get jump off out of that ship and let us run a proper airline. Well, we'll leave the parachute but to you at the end of the day. As far as Honorable Mazzoni is concerned and the point she raises, which are extremely valid, we would welcome any interaction between yourself and senior officials in the department, and let's share information on charges laid, case numbers, which we will pass on to the boards as well for them to follow up, and to the extent that we have capacity within the department, at least it will give us a proper overview of what each of the actors in this particular regard have been doing. On the recovery of the 1.1 million rand bursary, Mr. Tlakudi will address that in a moment. He is more familiar with what is going on in Denel. We do need to remind ourselves and that as a country that there are certain establishments which are defined as essential services, which actually have a particular legal status, and that legal status means that wanton strikes are not to be undertaken in those establishments. Regrettably, that's not the way in which things have happened over the last few weeks. We did intervene in the first instance, and just to set the record straight, not to give instructions to anybody or to dictate what percentage needs to be put on the table, but purely to say to both the employer and the employee organization, please sit down around the table and conduct a normal wage negotiation, which is what weeks later resulted in the wage settlement that we have. At the last minute, however, the issue of disciplinary action against those that have been culpable in relation to what you've described as violence and vandalism has arisen, and there's a meeting today as we talk at 11 o'clock where both the employer and the employee organizations have agreed to meet under the auspices of the CCMA and to find some resolution in that regard. But there, too, we must be quite clear. Nobody has ever talked about mass dismissals of people. You can't have mass dismissals. If person A is responsible for something improper and illegal, and which is open to disciplinary action, then that disciplinary action is against that particular individual, not on a mass basis. But I'm hoping that they begin to find each other in the discussions that are taking place today, and that sooner rather than later, the increases that are due to workers for this year are in fact paid to them, and they're not asked to wait for a long period. On the question of the loans, I think what creates a bit of uncertainty for us, which we wanted to clarify with the Treasury, is to what extent some of the rates of interest at which loans are acquired need to be regarded as commercial secrets, meaning if I'm borrowing money from you and I get it at 11%, but I'm going to somebody else and I want to actually bargain at 10.5%, if they know that I got it at 11, why offer it to me at 10.5? So we just want to clarify that issue amongst ourselves. And again, I want to assure the committee that as much as possible, we want total transparency. It's not about hiding the facts. We will, of course, try to satisfy ourselves in the process, as will the Treasury, that whatever loans are acquired at a competitive rate. I think the loan that was raised during the roadshow, for example, is pretty transparent in terms of the rate at which it was acquired, both the guaranteed part of it and the non-guaranteed part of it as well. On the Kusile fire, Ms. Makololo will address that. That was not a case of sabotage of any kind, but she'll explain how it actually happened. On the question of dealing with compromised individuals, maybe after we end, Chair, Ms. Mazzone could just whisper in my ear what her specific concern is, and then we can find a way of dealing with that. On Honourable Swart's point about the hawks, one is hoping that with some of the changes that have already happened and will be happening in the criminal justice system, that we will get to a point where the self-evident culprits in many of these acts of malfeasance, who, as you know, as you've indicated, are known, would in fact be dealt with. Because if there is no action taken against people who've been patently involved in billions of rounds of corrupt activity, then we as a country are actually giving people license. So they carry on, there's no consequences for what you've actually done. So thanks for letting us know what briefing was provided in the other quarter, but we will certainly be engaging with the Minister of Police and the Minister of Justice to ensure that as boards emerge with verifiable findings in terms of the involvement of various individuals, either at a board level in the past or the management or other levels within organizations, that they are dealt with in the right kind of way. And just for the record, when you said, Mr. Swart, that I was charged in terms of the PFMA, you agree with me that it was politically motivated and frivolous, to put it mildly. Okay. I think your point about civil actions is something that we need to take up a little bit more vigorously. We also have limitations in terms of capacity in the department, but clearly this is an area where we need to come back to you and say either our board has done X or we've done Y in terms of pursuing this. But I think we should also not raise too many expectations. As you know, as a lawyer, civil processes can take a very long time unless we begin to put moral pressure on some of these businesses. Like McKinsey paying back whatever they've paid back, well, what about Trillion and what about regiments and what about some of the IT firms and so on? So is it not time for us to campaign either as Parliament or as Parliament and allied organizations to actually say pay back the money do the right thing? Privately, many of them are, when you meet them in certain business contexts, will tell you how they're excruciating about these sorts of things or how their overseas principals are excruciating about it. But excruciating is one thing. Paying back money that is unjustifiably earned from South African entities is actually quite another. The same applies to applications in terms of Section 162. Mr. Makobe might want to comment on this, but some actions have been taken in this regard by civil society organizations, but it seems some of them taken in ordinate amount of preparation. So it's not a question of just reporting it and having somebody declared delinquent. The former chair of SAA, I think, is one case in point that hasn't been concluded yet, as far as I know. But we'll certainly see if one of my colleagues wants to actually comment on that. On the question of coal contracts and the way they were manipulated, as you reminded us, as we uncovered that during the Eskom inquiry, is still something that I think plagues the coal supply processes within Eskom. So we did visit, for example, the Hendrina power station, and across the road, inverted commas, is the optimum stroke to get a mine. And there is a conveyor belt, two of them actually, but they're standing still at this point in time. So I think when the board and management of Eskom come along, let them give you a progress report on where they are. And clearly one of the areas that the board is looking at is how the acquisition of coal moves away from short-term acquisitions, which are costly, to longer-term contracts of 20, 30, and 40 years where that is appropriate and far more cost-effective. But let it be also said that because coal prices are on the increase in overseas markets, there's a tendency amongst coal miners in South Africa not to supply to Eskom but to export coal and get the benefit of the export prices. So that's another challenge that I think Eskom has to actually deal with. As far as the narratives around reign of terror and so on, that's pure politics, so let's leave it at that. And I think what we need is a decisive stand to be taken by good, honest, ethical South Africans to do as much of the cleaning up as we can, wherever we are, in Parliament, outside of Parliament, in civil society organizations, or in political organizations where that is appropriate. And if suddenly there's a change of heart about the cleaning up of corruption process, well, let that be declared. And I'm sure the elections next year will show where people stand in relation to those who want to defend corruption as opposed to those who want to tackle corruption. Honorable Seri's point about Eskom borrowing, well, that's precisely the point, that at the moment you're sort of managing the past and the present and doing whatever you can to borrow money in order to have enough cash to meet your operational costs on the one hand, but also some of your investment costs as well. So one of the things that the board will tell you is that I think for this year and the coming year, they've reduced their capital investment from 65 to 45 billion. Now, it's good on the one hand because you're saving 20 billion. It's bad on the other hand because investment is what we require in South Africa. So you're actually decreasing the amount of investment. And if you look at the numbers that the National Treasury provides, you'll see that the bulk of what government provides as investment in what they call cross-fixed investment in our economy, the bulk of that comes from two SOEs, Transnet and Eskom. So if you're beginning to reduce those amounts, that has a negative impact on the macro economy as a whole. So ideally, over the next year or so, as Eskom develops its strategy by the end of September, they will work out a plan to steer Eskom away from an environment where the costs far overwhelm the revenue that they're collecting at this point in time. And like I said earlier on, like many of the other entities, they've got to look for new markets, look at how sales can be increased, but at a time when green buildings are being put up that require less electricity. People are using solar power for certain things, which means you're using less electricity as well. Eskom also has that challenge, which you'll see in one of the this morning's newspapers, about the culture of compliance in many communities in South Africa. In other words, you're using electricity, but you're not paying for it, which then gets municipalities into difficulty as well. So that's one of the areas that, together with the COCTA committee yourself and yourselves, you should look at in terms of what can we do from the Parliament side in order to encourage people to pay for services that they actually use, where that is actually appropriate. On the Richtersveld matter, Mr. Tlakudi will address that in a moment. On the Donnell side, are there prospects for, as you said, saving the entity? I certainly think there is. But again, it's about this difficult period that you've got to navigate. And if we can just keep it going for a short while and at the same time get the right management and get the right expertise in place and start selling what you're actually producing in order to earn revenue, then your creditors will be paid and the arms industry or defense industry in South Africa as a whole will benefit, because that's a whole ecosystem that works with Donnell as a hub in some ways. And in a year or two, you could reposition the organization. But there might be some tough decisions that need to be taken, very similar to some of the other entities as well. On shareholder compacts, we should certainly make them available. There's no reason why they should be secret. I don't know what the practice in the past has been, but we'll look into that for you so that you have the same information we have, if that is the case, that you don't actually have it. And at least what works in the department from what I've seen is the ability to at least evaluate each of the entities in terms of the compact, like you saw the numbers during the presentation. And more often than not, the entities don't disagree with the kind of numbers that have actually emerged. The only question is, does that translate into the right remuneration levels within the entities themselves? So that's the further work that we need to do. I did miss your second point, which I think is about the DG, Mr. Seleke. He's said something publicly that are rather unfortunate. I've been trying to manage this in a very dignified way, but, you know, people sometimes tend to lose their sense of dignity as they get further away into the wrong places. But the situation as we stand is that he's exiting from the department. The minister is not the employer in this instance, in the public service. It's the president that is the employer. There is an agreement that has been signed that, as you know, for DGs, they do what they call a redetermination in terms of what needs to be paid in terms of the contract and so on. There are one or two outstanding issues in terms of that agreement. I'm just catch up with where that is. But sooner rather than later, Mr. Seleke will no longer be in that position. I think I've dealt, Chair, with all the questions except the point you've made about restructuring the airlines. Will it be concluded in this term? I think if we can get a sense of direction. So what are we going to do with the three entities? Are we going to collapse them all into one, or are we going to use some of the other formulae that some of the consultants have provided, both the SAA and this department and National Treasury? You remember there was that study that was actually done. And in the next, say, 2 months maximum, this is the kind of matter that the Cabinet and the SOC Council will probably deal with and give us a sense of direction. And in the meantime, what we do at a sort of practical level is look for those synergies, as I was saying. And that's the only way we're going to survive as an aviation industry, if we learn the lessons of what other countries are doing and what other entities are doing elsewhere in the world. And we'll come back to you in the next, say, 6 to 8 weeks and let you know what progress we've made in that particular regard. Kusile.
Thanks, Minister. I think, as Minister has already said, I think the incident at Kusile with the FFP fire has not necessarily been linked to vandalism of employees.
We've had similar fires at power plants before, sometimes due to fuel carryover or incomplete combustion that goes into the FFP. I think we must allow the investigation process to carry on and establish the cause of such a fire. I think the important thing in the short term is that there hasn't been impact in terms of power production out of Kusile, and that's quite important for us. And the priority for the week has been to safeguard the plant, to preserve the plant, and to ensure that the investigation can start.
On the issue of the 1.1 million rands, Bazari awarded to the former Premier of Northwest, son, that is the investigation into that one, the board has concluded. It is a subject of a disciplinary hearing that unfolding within the SOC at present, and quite confident when the board comes here to report back to Parliament, they will be in a position to report, to give further information on the outcomes of that particular investigation. And of course, it is our expectation as a department where if the award of this bazaar has been found to be irregular, that those funds should be recovered. With that to the 45 million rands that is due to the Rakkersvaal community, as the PC will recall, that process requires that the department, in this case with Rural Development and Rakkersvaal community, must serve a joint order to the Land Claims Court for the amendment of the deed of settlement. That particular process has not unfolded as we had expected, as for the Rakkersvaal community to be able to assist us in this regard. The CPA has to be regularized. The ructions or the conflict in the community has unfortunately not helped, because the Rakkersvaal CPA has not availed themselves to this particular process, insisting that the 45 million rand should be paid out first, then they will cooperate. Unfortunately, it cannot happen that way. That is an area that Rural Development is paying particular attention to as the oversight department on CPAs in our country. Thank you.
With regard to declaring directors delinquent in terms of the Companies Act provides for an increased liabilities for directors. A court application has to be made to declare a director delinquent or place that director on what is called an order of probation for the breach of fiduciary duties, amongst others. And those who have resigned or removed in terms of Section 71 of the Companies Act can still be declared delinquent. But there has to be a prima facie evidence upon investigation. We have agreed with the SIU as they are conducting investigations on some of the SOC that once they have evidence that can be used, and applications will be made to court to declare certain directors delinquent.
Chair, that concludes the answers to the questions we've had so far. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister, and your delegation for the clarification and responses to our questions as the members of the committee. Minister, I would like to make a request that when Transnet comes to before the portfolio committee, we would like to have all the senior managers that were responsible for SOE over the past 6 years with regards to the 19 billion over expense or irregular expenditure, because we would like to get a clarification on where were they when all this was happening. No, Eskom, your department, senior managers that were responsible for SOEs, in particular the Eskom and the other ones that have reported. And also within Eskom, we know, we are aware, as we have reported before, that the CFO is no longer in the company and there is an acting. But within, under the CFO, there are senior managers that are responsible within finance department, and also would like to have someone that is senior on the auditing a section of ESCOM to come together with the top management that will be coming here, and I hope they will be led by the chairperson of the board, if practical possible. We would like them to be in attendance. We will be interrogating that and other issues, and then and then going forward, how are we going to prevent such occurrences going forward. Having said that, members, I think we can break, have a short break, and then we'll come back. Do we need 10 minutes or 15 minutes? Can I get an indication? Members, 10 minutes or 15? 10 is fine. We'll have a 10-minute break, and then when we come back, we'll get into the other agenda item. Thank you very much, Minister. I hope we'll be able to catch your flight in time.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. There are together with the Department of Public Works on outstanding issues of the appeal of the Overval Resort Limited Bill. Thank you very much. Over to you, Department.
Thank you, Chair. Our apologies, Chair, we did not prepare a presentation. We were told to do the narratives in the session that we made in a letter form, but nonetheless, I will talk to the issues, Chair. But apologies about that.
That's fine. Talk to the issues.
Chair, in our last meeting with the committee, we were asked to attend to three things. Number one, the committee requested us to provide them with a copy of the purchase and sale agreement, which we have. It should be in the pack. We made a copy, as well as the addendum to the agreement. It's also made available. It should be in the pack. Number two was to look into the resolution of the land claims where Aventura Bad Blast in Mpumalanga and Chibiza and Limpopo are situated. We have managed to engage with the Land Claims Commission in Mpumalanga for Bad Blast, and the information we received, Chair, is that the land claims in that area, Bad Blast, is not yet settled, but the Commission is already is engaging with the landowner to give the Commission an offer so as to enable the Commission to proceed with the settlement of the claim. What this means, Chair, is that in essence, that the claim has been validated. The process of the gazetting and all the procedural aspects that have got to be complied with have been complied with. So the parties now are at a negotiation stage now with the landowner. We went further then to ask the Commission to say, given the history of the and the, of this matter, it's been on since 2003, whether to try to establish from them as to whether they could give us a definite timeline or an indication as to when do they think the matter will be completed. The answer we got, Chair, was that they were unable to do that. All they could indicate to us was that they're engaging with the landowner and they could not give us a definite timeline by which this thing will be resolved. We want to engage then, Chair, the Commissioner for Limpopo as well on Chibiza. Chibiza, if you look at it, is a little bit backwards, though there's some progress on it. What we were told about Chibiza is that there are two claimants communities that have made a claim to that land, the Ndondo community and the Netengwe community. With regard to the Ndondo community, we were informed that the research has been approved and that the claim was accepted. The claim has also been gazetted. However, the verification process of the beneficiaries has still not been done. And then it was indicated to us that the claimants still have to adopt a settlement option. With regard to the Netengwe family, the research is also approved and the claim is also accepted. And it was indicated to us that that family, in fact, is part of the Ndondo community. The claim has also been gazetted, and the claimant verification process was done. But the claimant's community still have to adopt a settlement option. The commission was explained to us that the process is now is at the stage, is at the negotiation stage, and is still to be settled. Even with regard to this one, Chair, we try to establish as to find out as to when will the matter be brought to bed. Unfortunately, that's what we're told, that it takes a bit of time. It depends on a number of factors. The main factors indicated that the land claimant must still choose a settlement option. And after that, the commission must still engage the landowners to determine their position on what option the community would have opted for. So it was even said to us that in the event maybe the community decides to opt for land restitution, the commission will have to go back and engage the landowner accordingly. So even on this one, Chair, we could not be given a definite timeline as to by when that the matter will be laid to rest. If I could move to Blade Board and Swadini on the lease agreement, we managed to engage the Department of Public Works with Forever Resort, who bought those resorts. Public Works has agreed to grant Forever Resort the long-term lease in Blade Board and Swadini. However, there's a process that Public Works follows. It was indicated to us that before that could take place, Forever Resort has got to demonstrate to Public Works the impact that Forever Resort has had on the economy of Blade Board and Swadini. Things like they've got to demonstrate their job creation program, what amount of investment have they made in that particular area, as well as the issue of localization. So those are some of the things that they said. They have to make a business case in brief to Public Works before Public Works can finalize the conclusion of the lease. And that business case, Chair, it was going to go a long way in also determining what rental Forever Resort will be charged or will be liable for leasing that particular piece of land from the community. But then Public Works as well acknowledged the fact that even those two areas are under land claims. And it was agreed that the lease agreement that will be concluded with Forever Resort will take the land claims that have been instituted into cognizance. But Public Works indicated that they will make it in such a way that they don't prejudice the community, because what will happen is once those lease agreements are signed and once the land claims are resolved, those leases will have to be ceded to the claimants' communities. So it has to be made in such a manner that it really doesn't put them at a disadvantage. In terms of the process of how you do that, Public Works indicated that there are some forms that Forever Resort needs to complete, where they lay out their business case and everything. And then Public Works will embark on an evaluation criteria of some sort to see what is it that they have done and whatever, satisfy themselves. And only the ones that are satisfied that indeed they are making an impact in the economy of that part of those two areas, then can they determine what kind of a lease will be entered into. Then Public Works then indicated that once all those processes have been complied with, then a submission will still have to be made to the Minister of Public Works for final decision. But at this stage, then DPE will also need to come on board and support the submission to the Minister of Public Enterprises. And then it was indicated that maybe as a starting point, and maybe to try to expedite the process, our minister needs to rise to the Minister of Public Works in the matter. That is my brief in short.
Thank you very much for that briefing. Acting teacher, would you like to add anything? Okay. Members, that's the briefing by the department. Any further questions of clarity? These were the response to our questions. Honorable Ranto.
Chair, thank you very much. And thank you. And thanks for the explanation. The only thing that I want to raise, Chair, it's my concern about the process that is taking so long. Seemingly, this year will go to an end, and this term will end without resolving the problem of of the land claim. And this means this bill might go over to the next next parliament. It's actually a, I don't know what is the problem, because I thought this is being handled by people who know all of these things legally and socially, so. But I'm not sure what is the problem. I'm just raising a concern, Chair, that it looks like we are still going to sit with this bill and not processing it for it to become an act or a legal something. Thank you, Chair.
Department, you have to provide us with the time frames on all aspects that you've talked to, and that involves public works and the staff, together with the stakeholders that you are referring to. And as I indicated last time, that you want to conclude the overhaul of this legislation, this bill, by we said that we'd want to get a report by October. We want to finalize it. That's a period of BRRR, but before the parliament arises, we would want to conclude this exercise. And we have an instruction from the House Chair, really, to see to it that we conclude this, the overhaul of this bill as the portfolio committee of the fifth parliament. Yes, you can take updates from the legal advisor approach.
The last meeting that we had, the legal advice that we got was that to take up these other issues, the department must just give us information that these things will be resolved. But they shouldn't stand in the way of the committee passing a motion of desirability on the repeal of this act, because whether we repeal the act or not, it has got no impact on the other outstanding issues. But the act does not actually exist, because Aventura does not exist anymore. And then we can still oversee that rural development and the Department of Public Enterprise still addresses the issues of the community and all that. We can still do oversight over that. But it shouldn't stand on the way of the repeal of the act. I think that was the legal advice that we received. But I told Fatima to come. I'm sure she'll be here very soon.
Let me correct myself in a second. The repeal of the overvalue Resort Limited bill that we have to conclude by end of this year. That was our time frame that we gave to yourselves. Because we don't want to go beyond 2018. Because 2019 we might not even have that 4 months that we think we'll have due to the elections. We might have just less months to be in parliament, and the other month in our constituencies. So we rather aim at end of this year. We'll park that. I've noted you. I'm going to allow yourselves, if by the time you finish the legal, and someone can check on our legal advisor, we'll park that and continue with other items of the committee and come back. Acting DG, you want to start?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I think we are in alignment with what your legal counsel has as an opinion, because that is what we presented the last time, that it is our view that we can do the repeal of the legislation to cease the existence of overvalue. And that the residual matters can be dealt with outside of that process, because they are third-party processes that don't necessarily bear merit in terms of the process to repeal. We do appreciate the issue, that the fact that, you know, the committee
still has interest in ensuring that the issues are resolved, and we do have the same interest. But from a legal perspective, we can conclude the process, and we can be guided by the committee around whether we run the two processes in parallel, or whether the committee is of the view that we must conclude the settlement issues. I think that the settlement issues are a problem broadly in the country, and not necessarily limited to this, in terms of concluding land claims across board, and they do tend to take a long period of time. So our proposition would be that we proceed with the repeal of the legislation but still deal with the residual issues going forward.
Noted. Do you still want to add?
No.
Oh, covered. Okay. When you entered the committee room, our committee secretary had already conveyed your message on the repeal of the Overval Resort Limited Bill. But now that you are here, you can talk to it, but just to say that the department is agreeing with your opinion, just to be on record.
And thank you, Chair. Chair, you are correct that my view stands that the Act as it currently stands serves no purpose, and it needs to be purged from the statute book. The other issues, of which there are many, are peripheral issues. I don't think whether we pass this bill or not that it will have any bearing on those other issues. That being said, our advice remains that those issues must be transferred to the relevant portfolio committee to be dealt with in terms of oversight. So our advice at this stage is that the committee proceeds with the repeal, because the Act is serving absolutely no purpose at this point, as long as the committee is satisfied that those other issues are going to be dealt with appropriately. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that information. Members, if you may contribute to the proposals that are made by our legal team together with the department. Want to see the hands? Only Honorable Ranto.
Chair, if that is the case, let us complete the bill. Let us repeal the bill for as long as it does not go to have, as our legal advisor and the department agreeing with the legal advisor, I think there will be no backfiring from the repellent of the bill. Let us get to the process of repealing the bill.
Can I get an indication from other members that's the support? Can I have it recorded, Honorable Mazoni?
Chair, yes, support. This has been an issue that has been ongoing since I can remember being on this committee, and it must now actually come to its logical conclusion. So I support the repeal of this bill.
Thank you very much. Let's get that recorded, and then the process, please, let's take the process forward. Elika Rivers, do you want to come in at this stage? Okay. Yes, then we'll have this matter on the program going forward, so that we're able to finalize it. Thank you very much, members, on this matter. The last item is on the program. I think members have received, although it's not noted on the agenda, but you have received copies of the program. If not, please distribute, because there are amendments on the program, as we have noticed that today there were changes. Yes, you may leave if you want to. Thank you very much for your attendance, Acting DG, and your delegation. Members, I just want to bring to your attention that the today, you have dealt with today's one. Next week, did you put Thursday again? We might have a problem. Why not Wednesday? No, the but our Wednesday, or the 16th is tomorrow. You note that those engagements are postponed because we're taking an advantage of having a oversight week stroke committee, and then we thought that because most members would be on oversight week, there would be no caucuses. But we have since been alerted that some parties are holding their caucus meeting tomorrow morning. So we have since cancelled that meeting, tomorrow's meeting. Next week, I just want to bring you to the attention of Wednesday the 22nd. We would like to get that briefing with Transnet up to 12, if practical possible. And then at 12, we are proposing that we have a multi-party caucus for the inquiry from 12 to 1, where we'll discuss the process and how far have we gone in terms of the reports that we are busy with on the inquiry. That won't be a committee meeting. It will be a multi-party caucus. And I would like members to take note of that. The rest of the program is you are familiar with. It's up to the 12th of September. Due to that, the Transnet, we had to shift the date for Transnet due to their oversight visit by SCOPA. Hence, our program has overlapped to September. And that's the program, members. I take that members are quiet. I take that the program. Yes, Honorable Rancho.
The briefing by Transnet on progress made in addressing the concerns is out. It's not going to happen, or is it going to be one with the briefing of the outcomes of the investigation?
It's one briefing. It's one briefing. Initially, recall that they were supposed to come next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, but due to that kind of an engagement, in fact, this week, I think, this week, yes, they're supposed to come this week, and we had to give a SCOPA a chance because the date was coinciding with the visit by SCOPA. And then the other thing that I wanted to bring to the attention of the members is that we've been invited to have a joint meeting with the Energy Portfolio Committee on the ESCOM governance issues and coal supply. So the date, initially they talked, it was on the 21st, and then they requested a postponement to the 28th, if members can take note of that. And on your behalf, I've already confirmed that we will be there, all of us, in full force. Okay. You're welcome. I've committed you already. And on that note, I take that members, the program is acceptable. Thank you. Thank you very much. On that note, I want to say that the apologies are taken as recorded on the register. Thank you.
Chair, can I just say something on the issue of the inquiry?
Okay, no, Honorable Rancho will just take us on the process. And then we close the meeting. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chairperson, I just wanted to say to the members, we are still awaiting the submissions from our legal team. That is the... Mr. Van Ar... Mr. Van... advocate Vanara and whoever he works with to give us the submission. We will send the immediately the submissions come, we will send them through to the members so that the members read on the submissions that will be coming from Mr. Vanara and add according to your party. You will discuss the submission with your party. When we come to the multi-party caucus that we will have, then we will discuss all the submissions that will be there. Please take note that you must read the submission, discuss it with, if it's possible, discuss it within your party and bring submissions, written submissions with you so that we add on what we have or we take out from what we have. And then after that, we will see what we will do. We will discuss all the processes going forward.
I
just wanted to ask if I understand Ms. Ranta. She said we are awaiting Advocate Vanara's submission. When will we get that? Because if you want us to read that and comment by next Wednesday, it doesn't give us. So we need to get that as quickly as possible by the latest on Friday, so that we can look at it and because this will be the first time we're looking at that whole inquiry. Yeah. And for us to be properly prepared by next Wednesday's multi-party caucus, we need that urgently. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. That's taken, and it must be noted. Thank you very much, members, for the attendance and our guests that have remained with us up to this far, and the meeting is adjourned. You're welcome.